Great. Okay, so I'm going to talk for maybe perhaps about 20 minutes or something like that. And I'm really not going to mention LCFG very much at all at this stage. What I want to try and do is to give some background to the topic of system configuration. So this is very relevant, though, because one of the problems with using a configuration tool like LCFG is understanding exactly what your aims are and what you're trying to do. The subject really isn't that advanced at the moment where we can do everything absolutely automatically. You can't just go and download this tool off the network and have it run your whole installation. So in any kind of installation at the moment, your system configuration is this delicate balance of kind of automatic tools and manual processes, and it's trying to make a complete, take an overall view of this that's important. So really I want to try and talk about what I think system configuration is, and to give you a little bit of background context. So this will do two things. First of all, it will help you, maybe when you get home and you're trying to configure a site, to understand the whole picture. And secondly, it'll help you later on this morning when we come to look at some of the details of LCFG, just to understand why things have been done in a certain way. Because it's important that you do things with a view to fitting them into a bigger context. Okay. Okay, so I really want to talk about system configuration and what it is. And I'm going to start off by not really thinking about automation much at all, just thinking about what the manual process is, about what's involved if you're configuring these things manually. And then there's a whole bunch of sort of complicating factors that I want to talk about as well. And then we can talk a little bit about automation and what the state of the art in automation is and where I think things are going. And then I'll kind of just finish off with a little bit about LCFG and how I think it fits into this context. And then that'll lead into the next section where we'll start to look at some details of LCFG. I guess this is relevant whether you actually want to use the details of LCFG or not. I would hope that this kind of background information would give you a good grounding to evaluate any other configuration tools that you come up against as well. I mean, there's been a real plethora of kind of configuration tools and some new ones recently, and I think it's really important that you don't just read the marketing blurb that goes with them. You think about how those actually get used and how they fit into a real sort of context. So that's the kind of background that it'll give you. If you're interested in this material a little bit more, most of this is based around this Sage system configuration booklet, and I'm not actually sure what happens. I think you may be able to download a copy of it, or you might have to buy a copy of it, but anyway, there's a copy here if you want to kind of flick through it and see what it looks like. Okay, so we're going to try and I just want to define what I think of as system configuration to start off with. And the easiest way of doing that is just to think of this, the problem. So you can actually specify this quite succinctly. You're going to start off with several hundred or thousand new machines there, and these things are just bare hardware. And what you've got somewhere is a pile of software to go on them. It might be on these disks or on the network. And you've got some idea of what you want to build. So maybe you want to build an ISP installation, or maybe you want to build a lab of student machines like this. And so the system configuration is how do you get from that to some working system that performs according to that specification? So somewhere along the way you've got to kind of load all this software onto all these machines, and you've got to go and configure all the machines, you've got to do all these settings in these configuration files and so on. And I guess the important points are that it's not just you're not just configuring individual machines on their own. Most of the hard work and most of the complexity comes from all the relationships that you get between these machines in any realistic kind of installation. So if you've got if you're looking at the whole installation, you've got all these services going on, like DNS and your LDAP and your NFS and so on, and it's the relationships between the machines that matters. And you have to configure your clients to match your servers and so on, and you have to keep all this lot going. And finally, the really important thing is that this is not a static one-off process. You know, you'll get lots of tools for kind of installing systems that purport to be kind of configuration tools, and you'll kind of set it up and they'll build you this system, but then they don't cater for what happens when things change afterwards. And if you've got any realistic installation at all, things change like all the time. Hardware breaks, people change their mind about what they want, you get new boxes, software gets upgraded, and this is just like a continuous kind of churn. In fact, Joe Svantec coined the term asymptotic configuration that I really like. If you've got any installation of any significant size, it's never configured correctly because it's always trying to catch up. You know, by the time you configure this bit correctly, someone's changed their mind about how something else should work. So you've always got this little bit that's never quite there, you know. Okay, so that's just... this is just a diagram, really, of the same kind of thing that we had as I was talking about there. You're starting off with this hardware, a big pile of software, some idea of what you want to do, and out at the end of it, you've got to get this pile of machines like this that are actually doing the job. And in addition, you've got to cater for these kind of changes and fold them back into the system. Okay, so let's just, you can think of that at the moment as a completely manual process, you know, like you might have done years ago or with a small installation. You've got this one sysadmin, they come in, they get the software off the CDs, they load it on the machines, you edit the configuration files, and when something breaks, the sysadmin comes running in off his page and starts changing things. And that's the kind of manual process. So let's just stay with that manual process just for a moment and have a look at some of the complicating factors. I'm not going to go into these in a lot of detail. If you are interested, they're in the book. But what I want you to do is I want you to kind of think about these, because these are the things that make life hard in practice. You know, it's not as simple as it might have looked on that other slide. I've already talked about managing relationships. You're not just configuring individual machines. You know, if you move the mail server, you need to tell the clients that the mail server's moved, you know. I've already talked about change. Things break. People change their mind about what they want. You've also got a lot of diversity. A lot of the early configuration tools were concerned with just kind of cloning the configuration of one machine. And that might work. Maybe in a lab like this, you might get away with it because all these machines are very, very similar. But that's not really what I'm interested in. I'm interested in these whole big infrastructures where you've got your LDAP server and your DNS server and your web server and your databases. You know, all these machines are different and they all fit together. So you can't just do this cookie cutter thing where you replicate one of them. You've also got devolved management. This is important. As things get big, you know, in the old days, maybe one person would be kind of in charge of all these machines and they would go and hand tweak all the files on it. But nowadays, people are responsible for different aspects. If I want to do something that's security related to some machines, I'm not going to do it myself. I go talk to a security specialist and he's going to say, no, they should all be set up like this. And people like the web specialist would have a view as well. So all these different people are looking at different aspects of the machine, and these all kind of cross-cut, and you have to bring all these aspects together on the individual machines. The whole thing's a big distributed system, so you're going to get communication failures and latency, and all those issues are going to be kind of normal. They're not. You can't treat those as kind of exceptional error conditions. You have to accept the fact that they happen all the time. You've got people at different levels of experience in using the system. You might have simple technicians that are putting in a new set of boxes and setting up a few parameters on them, or you might have somebody that's designing this multi-tier web service, and your system has to kind of cater and accept all these different levels. And finally, more recently, there's this big drive towards autonomic systems. That's systems that can reconfigure themselves automatically if something breaks or if you want to make some kind of changes. So I guess if you were evaluating any new configuration system that you've got, whether it's a manual thing or it's some tool, those are the kind of things that I would want to just bear in mind and say, how well does it perform on these things here, and is it going to cause us a problem if it doesn't? And as I say, there's a lot more about that in the book if you want. Just as a short example of that, think about doing something like just putting up a new web server. It's got lots of links and connections with other boxes. It's not just a single machine. You've got to create some kind of environment for it. It's got to have a DNS entry somewhere. Maybe it needs a DHCP entry. You need to do something with a firewall. You've got to get some signed certificates for it. You probably want to back it up, and you've got to interact with the backup system. And then you have to configure your web server machine itself to take into account all these kind of connections. So for me, the bottom bit is easy, just like setting up the machines is easy. The interesting thing is how you deal with these connections between the machines in your infrastructure. Okay, and just a few of the kind of difficulties that you run into. The relationships we've talked about, you have to maintain those. You know, if you move your web service to another machine, you're going to have to change the firewall. So you have to keep those relationships going. As things get complicated, there's an interest as well in the correctness of the configuration. Can you be absolutely sure about the security of your whole system? Can you be sure that there isn't some root because, oh, Fred's allowed root on that machine there, therefore he could change that software and that gets propagated onto this machine? That's understanding the security, the web of trust between the machines, and being confident in that. And then a final example is just a simple question of replacing broken machines. If you have a simple backup strategy, that works if you replace a machine with one of the same kind. But if you wanted to replace a machine with one of a different kind or that was configured slightly differently, then the backup strategy is really not much use to you at all. You know, maybe you've loaded the wrong disk drivers or something like that. You really need your configuration system to understand things in a bit more detail. So that's the kind of, I guess that's the problem that I'm trying to address, that configuration problem. Where are we up to in the state of the art of doing this automatically or in helping to automate this? So the first point, I think, is that most of the automatic configuration software is something that's grown from the bottom up. People did everything manually, and then they started to write these little scripts to automate various bits and pieces, and then people started to write scripts to make the automation a little bit easier. But all this is kind of motivated from the bottom up. It starts with kind of editing configuration files and helping you to do that across a large number of machines. And so it's automated a lot of these low-level manual procedures. But in most cases at the moment, the higher level decision making is still manual. And how far up that kind of stack your automation goes depends on your site. You know, maybe you have some tools that will allow you to distribute the same configuration files to a bunch of machines, you know. But do you have the tools that would, say, automatically move the automatically change the firewall holes when you move the web server from one place to another? You know, that's an example of a kind of higher level functionality. And most sites are at some sort of stage on this kind of ladder. One of the problems is that a lot of the existing tools that people use, I should mention things like CF Engine, for example. It's designed really to be coded. It's a low-level tool, and it's designed to be coded by humans. And it's kind of hard to incorporate those into a complete stack that does automation higher up, because it's designed to be written. The code's designed to be written by humans, not generated necessarily, and it doesn't handle some of these higher-level things. So it's quite a difficult tool to incorporate into a stack. I'm not saying you can't. I'm sure you can write stuff that generates CF Engine code, and lots of people do. But it's not a natural a thing. So just a word now about why you might want to automate more. It might sound stupid, but it's worthwhile just kind of asking this again when you come to evaluate tools or procedures that you're using. Just try and evaluate them against what you're trying to do. I mean, the first thing obviously is efficiency. If you've got 500 machines, you can't send someone around to hand edit 500 configuration files. But that's not really the only reason. You want to manage the complexity in some way. I've already talked about that in connection with security, for example. And you want to be absolutely sure that these things are correct. You know, you've got like, I was doing some configuration work for CERN, and they have thousands of machines that are chewing away on this physics problem for ages, for months, until they spit out some answer, or they they identify this one particle that's going to appear in the accelerator every 10 years. You know, you really don't want to get to the end of that and then find that your 1,000 node cluster, one of them had the wrong maths library on it, and you're not too sure that whether or not the answers were right. You know, the correctness is really important. And security we've talked about. And then, obviously now, these things are getting very complex and we want to give some degree of reliability to them. So that's really where the one of the reasons for this autonomic reconfiguration, the interest in autonomic reconfiguration. So there's some of the kinds of things. These are some of the reasons why we're trying to push the automation level higher up the stack. So I guess these would be my recommendations for you. Even if you're only automating the bottom levels, try to think about the whole process. Think about the things that you do manually and where they fit in and how they fit together. And use these tools to automate the bottom level, but kind of have an eye on doing the higher level automation. Think about, if I was going to try and do this more complicated stuff automatically, how would it interface to what I've got? You know, so don't put a system in place that has some complicated kind of manual interface to it. It's going to make it hard for you to raise the level later on. And something that's really important that will come out later on, try and think in terms of declarative specifications for your configurations. So what I mean by this is that really don't get bogged down in undisciplined sort of scripting. Don't write loads of scripts that go off and do things, because you don't really know. It's the end result that you're interested in. And what we would like to be able to do is to specify the end result and then have some system that went and worked out what to do and produced that end result. If you kind of work at it the wrong way around, if you write these loads of scripts that go and do loads of things, then once it gets sufficiently complicated, nobody's really got any idea what the end result's going to be, and you have no confidence that it's right, and you don't really know what you've got at the end. So think in terms of kind of specifying what you want. Oh, and do beware of the marketing. There is some over-enthusiastic marketing for some configuration tools, and I won't kind of go into that except to ask you, well, think about these general issues in relation to any kind of tool that you're considering. Okay, and then just, so that's my blurb about general configuration. Just to say a little bit about how this relates to LCFG. And this is not particularly advertising, this is just saying that LCFG is kind of designed with those principles in mind. So it's got a very clean interface to the lower layers. As you'll see later on when you do the practical, you write a little kind of component code, and what that does is kind of, it hides all the nitty-gritty details and it presents a nice, simple interface to that bit of the configuration that you can then use to do higher level things with. So you've got these modular components that you can replace that plug in at the bottom layer, and then they present this nice uniform high level interface. It does support this fully prescriptive configuration, so that if you want to manage your system entirely so there's no manual configuration involved at all, which is obviously necessary for something like autonomics, you can do so. Although I should point out here that LCFG has had a reputation in the past for enforcing this. It doesn't. You can use LCFG just to manage little tiny bits of things all over the place, except that obviously this is a particular strength, and it's something that we do here and something we'd encourage people to move towards. It handles, not well, but it handles some degree of managing relationships between machines. So it'll do that example that I mentioned a moment ago. If I move my web server from one machine to another, then it'll automatically reconfigure the firewall to follow it, and you don't have to track those kind of relationships by hand. And it's also, again, not well, but it handles this idea of aspects where you will have multiple people managing different aspects of a service, like someone doing the security and so on. So those are the ways in which LCFG kind of goes towards supporting some of those general things that we've talked about. The slides for the talk are, they're on the web there, but I think you've probably got copies of them, and they're probably somewhere else as well. That I've got one copy of this lying around here. If anybody wants to flick through it later on, that's the book that explains some of this background in a bit more detail. And I think that's me. Okay, so I think there's just, I mean, I can take a couple of questions if anybody's got any questions on that. Okay, so I hope that's kind of set the scene for you. I've said very little about LCFG there, but I hope that's given you a feel of what we're trying to do. So as you work with LCFG during the rest of the day, you'll be able to put it in a little bit of context, and you might see why things are done in a certain way, and you might see how to be able to exploit LCFG to do some of these higher level things. Okay, so I'll hand over to Kenny's going to go next.